After 4 years of siege and bombing, buses evacuated about 8,000 of the remaining residents of the Syrian town of Daraya, a suburb of Damascus, to the cheers of pro-government fighters that you can hear there. Took place on Friday. The surrender of the hollowed-out town, a win for the Assad regime, a week after three straight days of incendiary bombs that destroyed the town's one remaining hospital. Meanwhile, in northern Syria, it's a chaotic battleground of militias, nations, and humanitarian agencies that diplomats are trying to clarify. Vice President Joe Biden has met with Turkey's President Erdogan in Ankara, and Secretary of State Kerry has met with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in Geneva. Rami Khoury is a senior fellow at the Issam Ferris Institute for Public Policy and International Affairs at the American University of Beirut. He says that the thousands of people who evacuated Daraya were moved to a different part of the war-torn nation.
The fighters were mostly sent to Idlib, where they joined their fellow fighters in the Free Syrian Army and other rebel groups under rebel control, not under the government. About 2,500 civilians were evacuated into other areas, mostly under the government control, but living reasonably securely, one hopes. And then some few thousand stayed in the town. The town is pretty devastated. There's not much there. It has to be pretty much rebuilt. But like most of these towns all over Syria and in parts of Iraq, the towns are essentially leveled, and a lot of them are just rubble. But there is the symbolic value of saying either that I captured the town from my opponents or I withstood the siege and stood my ground and I'm still here. But the actual town is not, you know, anything worth very much other than symbolic value. And this is one of the problems with warfare, that it's quite irrational, but people do these things.
But does Bashar al-Assad get any credibility here, militarily speaking, from this siege of a suburb of Damascus that now looks more and more like a fortress from which there is no real escape for him?
He gets a tiny little bit of gain credit, maybe, for having pushed the fighters out, and therefore there's no more military resistance in Daraya, resistance against the Assad government. But that is, I think, negated by the overwhelming negative publicity he gets for having essentially subjugated civilians to a medieval-style starvation siege. And it was just awful what people were having to do to survive in some of these places. There's about 10 or 12 other places around Syria that have been subjected to the same kind of starvation sieges. And when people run out of food and then medicine and then ammunition, then they essentially have to give up. And the government policy is to try to negotiate individual agreements with individual towns rather than a blanket wholesale ceasefire agreement with all of the opposition, because the opposition is divided into many different groups, which makes it more complicated as well. So nobody really gains from this. This is just a symbol of the cumulative chronic suffering of, and, you know, dehumanization of everybody involved in these wars and battles inside Syria.
What do you make of the Turkish intervention now that they've decided to change, if not strategy, then their tactics?
You know, the north of Syria is the equivalent of what I used to call in college a cafeteria food fight, where you have like 8 or 10 different people all fighting each other and all, you know, throwing ammunition at the other. And in some cases, friendly people are hitting their own allies, and nobody's quite sure who they're actually fighting. It's one of the most complex, contradictory, and quite bewildering situations, I think, in modern warfare or geostrategic ideological confrontations anywhere in the world. What is clear is that you have some decisive actors. Russia is one of them. Iran is one of them. Turkey is one of them. These three very decisive actors are actually taking whatever action they need to take to preserve what they see as their interest or the interests of their allies. But what you really have going on in the North is a lesson in kind of fortitude and clarity and diligence and persistence, that when a power decides it needs to take action to protect itself, it takes action. And that's what the Turks have done now by going into northern Syria to fight the Kurds and to fight the Islamic State at the same time. It's fascinating that Iran, Turkey, and Russia are playing kind of diplomatic footsies and meeting with each other and working out agreements because they all have certain convergences and interests. And they're, even though they don't like each other in many ways, they also realize that, you know, this isn't a beauty contest. This is hardball, and you need to deal with people that you don't like if that is what gets you certain strategic gains or assets or benefits that serve your national interests. So that's the real story, I think, of northern Syria. It's separating the amateurs from the pros in these kinds of strategic battles between different countries. And unfortunately, it's one more example of the Kurds throughout modern history being sold out by the great powers.
And all the players here get some sort of badge of participation, but the Syrian people get nothing in the end.
There are a lot of Syrians who are actually fighting along with the Turks and the Russians and others. But the problem is that these decisions about war and peace are not made by Syrian people in any kind of consultative or democratic way. It's a small elite groups of traditional leaders or government leaders who were imposed in an autocratic way. And therefore, ordinary Syrians have no say in what's going on. And that's one of the reasons why they rebelled in the first place 5.5 years ago. And in fact, all over the Arab world, the popular uprisings of the Arab Spring, as it's called, people decided they couldn't live like this anymore. They had to be involved in running their own countries. But the consequences in Syria are far greater than other places because of the savage and ongoing nature of the warfare and the complexities when so many foreign, regional, and international actors get involved.
Rami Khoury is a senior fellow at the Issam Ferris Institute for Public Policy and International Affairs at the American University of Beirut. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.